Thank you so much. Like I said, this is going to be a little bit different than some of the other presentations in this talk, in this session, as I'm going to focus exclusively on how prescription drug abuse impacts a college population. And I also have no financial relationships to disclose. All right, so the objectives of my presentation today are going to be to describe the issue of prescription drug abuse among college students, as well as characteristics associated with college student prescription drug use. I'm also going to examine how these risk factors can be differed or shared across the different types of prescription drug classes that are commonly used among by college students. I'm going to finish my presentation by discussing our study's conclusions, as well as some recommendations for future research and prevention efforts.
Could you speak closer to the microphone?
Okay. Sorry about that. All right, so you might know that young adults report some of the highest rates of prescription drug use than any other age group. So this is data from the 2011 National Survey on Drug Use and Health. They reported that 5% of young adults aged 18 to 25 reported past month non-medical use of prescription drugs, and 12.7% reported use in the previous year. To put this in perspective, these rates are about 3 times greater than the rates of adults over the age of 25. This also makes prescription drugs the second most commonly used illicit drug behind marijuana. And in addition, young adulthood is a sensitive period for the initiation of prescription drug use. So one study found that the mean age for the first non-medical use of prescription drugs is about 20 years old. So this makes these prevention efforts to target individuals before this first use pretty important. All right, so college students represent a unique subpopulation of young adults who have different risk factors associated with their prescription drug use. So substance use, you might know, is often viewed as normative during the college years, or kind of like a rite of passage. And also, prescription drug use can be seen as more socially acceptable than maybe other types of illicit drug use. In addition, you know that alcohol use is very prevalent among college populations, so the co-administration of alcohol with prescription drugs is very frequently reported and concerning, because it can lead to drug interactions and risk for unintentional drug overdose. In addition, college students report different types of prescription drug use along with different motives for use. So we know that college students are much more likely to report using prescription stimulants non-medically for reasons related to studying or increasing their academic performance. And there are also some influencing characteristics that are unique to the college environment that can affect this issue. So these might be related to factors related to academic achievement, participation in certain college organizations, and even on-campus versus off-campus residents. And finally, the college environment is an important opportunity for intervention in this issue because the structures are normally in place across college campuses to really initiate a widespread or campus-wide prevention effort. All right, so a lot of the previous literature on college student prescription drug use has looked at either one prescription drug, like frequently stimulants, or looked at how the general use of any prescription drugs are shown in a college population. So I wanted to know if these different influencing characteristics might be different across the different types of prescription drugs that are commonly used among college students. So we know there are lots of different types of prescription drugs that are used, and these have vastly different effects on the body, and individuals also have very different motives for using these prescription drugs. So in the current study, we looked at how risk and protective factors were associated, either shared or varied, with any users of any prescription drug, users of prescription opioids, sedatives, and stimulants. And then we also included a polyprescription drug use group, because we noticed a lot of students reporting reported using more than one of these prescription drugs non-medically within the previous year. Also, I want to note that these groups were not mutually exclusive, so individuals could belong to more than one of these prescription drug using groups. All right, so this was a secondary analysis of data collected from using the National College Health Assessment. This is a survey that was developed by the American College Health Association, and it covers several different health behavior domains, including substance abuse is just one of these topic areas. So these data are from the Spring 2011 National College Health Assessment that was distributed to students at the University of South Florida. So in our study, 5,000 students were invited to participate to take the survey. There was a final sample of 1,146 undergraduate students. This is full-time degree-seeking undergraduates, and this represents a response rate of 23%. All right, so this table shows some of the characteristics of our respondents. 76% of the sample were female, with a mean age of about 22 years old. So you can see the racial distribution was very similar to that of the university student body. However, older students and females were slightly overrepresented in our sample. All right, so there are lots of definitions used in the literature to define non-medical prescription drug use. So I took this question directly from the National College Health Assessment. So whenever I'm talking about non-medical prescription drug use in my study, I'm going to be referring to taking prescription painkillers, sedatives, or stimulants that were not prescribed by a doctor within the previous 12 months. All right. We also conducted a fairly large review of the literature and identified several different domains, variable domains that can influence prescription drug use in the sample. So we included several variables related to demographics, academic and school-specific factors, perceptions of peer substance use, self-reported actual substance use, having been diagnosed or treated for a mental health condition, and having experienced academic impediments due to their substance use and mental health conditions. All right, so we conducted univariate statistics to describe the prevalence of prescription drug use in our sample, the appropriate chi-squared, and independent t-tests to look at bivariate associations between those reporting any use and those not reporting use. And then the variables that came out significant in this bivariate analysis were then later included in the multivariable logistic regression models that we conducted to examine how risk factors were associated with these different types of prescription drug use. So that, again, that was prescription opioid, sedative, stimulant, and then polyprescription drug use. So this table shows kind of the prevalence of prescription drug use in our sample. A total of 146 students, which was 12.7% of our sample, reported using any of these three prescription drugs non-medically within the previous year. You can see opioids were most commonly reported, followed closely by stimulant and then sedative use. And you can also see that these were not mutually exclusive, so a great portion of our students reported using more than one of these prescription drugs. 28% of prescription drug users reported using multiple prescription drugs non-medically within the previous year. I'm going to go really quickly through the bivariate results before I get on to the multivariable results. First, I'd like to say that none of the demographic, school-specific, or variables related to perceptions of peer substance use came out as significant in our analyses. So besides demographics, these were not included in the multivariable analyses. However, all of the past 30-day substance use variables were significant. So students who used prescription drugs were also more likely to use alcohol, marijuana, and other illicit drugs. They were also more likely to report driving after drinking any alcohol. In addition, prescription drug users were more likely to report having been diagnosed with a variety of mental health conditions, including ADHD, depression, and panic attacks. And I put a line there to differentiate between our significant and non-significant findings. So this was also interesting. We included impediments to academic performance. So basically, these could range in severity from receiving a lower grade on a test or a project to actually failing to complete a course due to these substance use and mental health conditions. So prescription drug users were more likely to experience these impediments to their academic performance related to alcohol use, drug use, anxiety, ADHD, and depression. All right, so I'm now going to talk about the multivariable results. First, just looking at users of any of these prescription drugs, they were significantly more likely to report other illicit drug use, driving after drinking alcohol, and experiencing impediments due to drug use and to depression. All right, so this Venn diagram kind of shows how variables were either shared or shared or unique across the different types of prescription drug users that we examined. So you can see in the middle, I don't know if I can, right there, number two, that's other illicit drug use, and that was the only variable that was shared across all of our study models. So you can see that opioid users actually had no unique risk factors associated with its use, but actually shared several factors with the other prescription drug using groups. So they were more likely, opioid users were more likely to report driving after drinking alcohol, having been diagnosed or treated for ADHD, and having experienced academic impediments due to their drug use and due to ADHD. So the polyprescription drug users looked very similar to the opioid users. However, when we looked at them a little bit more closely, we discovered that the majority of the polyprescription drug users, actually it was like 98% of them, reported prescription opioids as one of their drugs that they used. So this is probably why the risk factors were so similar. All right, so sedative and stimulant users had several unique risk factors associated with their use. So sedative users were more likely to report being male, more likely to report those academic impediments due to depression. They also shared some risk factors with the opioid and poly users, in that they were more likely to report these impediments due to drug use and to ADHD. And then again, stimulant users were fairly unique in our analyses. So they were more likely to use marijuana, and they're also more likely to report those academic impediments due to alcohol use. In addition, they were more likely to report driving after drinking alcohol, which was shared with the opioid users. All right, so what were our overall findings? I just want to emphasize that prescription drug use is not the norm among college students. So the vast majority of students don't use these prescription drugs non-medically. However, 12.7% of our sample did report using these prescription drugs, and this is still a significant group of students, and this is still an important issue on college campuses. So we found that the risk factors that were most strongly associated with any of these types of prescription drug use had to do with using other substances, having a mental health diagnosis, and having experienced those academic impediments due to their drug use and mental health symptoms. In addition, there were both shared and unique risk factors that emerged in our multivariable analyses. So other illicit drug use, again, was the only risk factor that was shared across all five study models that we conducted. Stimulant users and sedative users emerged as distinct. As an example, stimulant use was uniquely associated, or alcohol and marijuana use was uniquely associated with using prescription stimulants. So I know that a lot of the previous literature has suggested that stimulant use may arise as a way to cope with these negative academic impediments due to excessive alcohol and marijuana use, and our study does support these findings. There were several limitations of the current study. It was cross-sectional data, so we can't assume causality, and we also couldn't look at trends over time, which is something I think future research could do. Also, this was secondary data analysis. It's a very large survey that covers several different health behavior areas. So the specific questions related to prescription drugs were fairly limited. Also, the way we define prescription drug use could have excluded certain groups of users, such as those who do have legitimate prescriptions but maybe use them in excess or for non-medical purposes. So if anything, the actual rates of prescription drug use could be greater than what we found. Finally, the prescription drug using groups that we compared were not mutually exclusive. So this is something I really wanted to do, but we were limited due to a small sample size of prescription drug users. So I think like a future research, or maybe we could in the future sometime look at these similar risk factors, but with a larger sample of students. So what were the overall implications? First, it helped us understand the extent of this issue among college students and among students at our specific university. Because of this, I reported some of these results to community advocacy groups like the Hillsborough County Anti-Drug Alliance and their Prescription Drug Task Force. I've also presented some of these results to individuals who work within the Department of Wellness Education at our university. So I'm hoping that they use this information when they're developing their prevention efforts. And I hope this information shows them that prescription drug use is still a problem on their campus. I think health educators would, it'd be great for to tell health educators that co-occurring substance use and mental health problems are very common among these prescription drug users. So they should be considering this when they're developing their prevention efforts, because it definitely makes the issue a lot more complicated. Finally, we found several unique risk factors and shared risk factors across our study models. So this kind of indicates that a more targeted prevention effort, maybe that focuses on specific type of prescription drugs that are used, may be more effective than the efforts that just target the general use of any type of prescription drug. And I have my acknowledgments there. Also, here's my email address if you'd like to ask me any further questions, and then also after this, during the Q&A period.
Thanks, Nicole. I think it's valuable to look at all these populations and what these different data sources would tell us. So I'd like to ask the panel to come up and sit at this main table here so we can go through the question and answer period. And putting this workshop together, I think what we wanted to do was to let people know that there are these different data sources, different survey systems that are out there, different modeling techniques, and different ways to look at data so that public health interventions can be targeted to reduce that risk of unintended consequences, which I've learned about over the years with some of these interventions myself. So let's open it up for questions. Yes, ma'am. Can everyone hear okay?
Yes, we combined all the other illicit drugs into one category because we didn't have a big enough sample size to look at the individual illicit drugs, and then we also looked at marijuana separately. So that was the use of other illicit drugs besides marijuana that was associated with all.
Thank you.
Just a comment on that question, which is we found it in a study that marijuana use does correlate with prescription drug use, so it does manage. My question, two of you showed the very popular slide that shows what percentage of people got their drugs from different sources. But we've seen, if we look at enough of Chris's slides, that like in alcohol, maybe 7% of the users consume more than half of the drugs. And I have the suspicion when we look at, say, 4% or pill mill people, that maybe that 7% has a very different look at that pattern. And I'm curious, Nicole, whether your simulation model... your simulation model might give us some insight into that. As I looked at how you have people converting over to paid, have you looked at what proportion of the total consumption is coming out of those paid users?
We're examining
we're examining that. The NSDUH data is limited because they are asking, you can't actually get at what volumes people are consuming based on the NSDUH data. You can get at kind of how often they use. So we're trying to triangulate using different data sources what those volumes actually are. So I guess we're working on it.
I'll ask more questions. Nicole, I think a limitation that you need to cite is there are other universities where the prescription use is 5 times what you're seeing at your university. You look at Harvard, and half the students say in the past year they've used Adderall. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They've used it or used it non-medically? Or
used it non-medically. Yeah.
You had a question? Yes, sir.
I'm Jay Sugarman, the Injury Center at CDC and Health Systems, and probably most for Eric, in terms of implementation of healthcare plans, you had talked about this, you know, likely variation amongst providers within Indiana. Is there any movement towards standardizing medical practice across healthcare organizations, health maintenance organizations in Indiana using EHR to sort of flag patients through screening and then recommend through a series of prompts, particular opiates or alternatives to opiates for patients?
There are a number of standardization efforts going on. Most of them are emanating from the professional societies, so there's growing sort of, influence on standard of practice that are being sort of disseminated now, which have yet to be built into some of our EHR systems. Indiana is sort of one of the early adopters of EHR. We have actually a pretty comprehensive review that covers most of the state now, which is pretty exciting. But there's a lot of debate among the provider organizations about which standards should be applied and which conditions. So I don't know that we have a consensus statement about that. One of the Attorney General's sort of subgroups is actually looking into that. We did have a legislative proposal that did not get passed that was actually trying to link inspect to criminal justice records. And there was a proposal by one of our legislatures to flag any convicted drug offender in the inspect system so that there would be a red flag that would show up, do not prescribe to this person at all. The treatment community went ballistic over that for probably appropriate reasons about the potential for stigmatizing people who are in recovery. And so I think there's a lot of debate about this, but I'm not sure there's a consensus. But what is starting to happen is that in some of the larger health systems, as Nick alluded to, the access to the inspect has been integrated into the EHR systems so that it's much less onerous to get to. Although we are actually in the midst of doing a survey of all prescribers and dispensers in Indiana. This is our second week of prescribing. We're trying to figure out the issues around barriers and use of that. So stay tuned in the next month or so. We should be releasing a report about that. I don't think it's as, even though it's mandatory that pharmacies report, prescribers are not mandated to use it. And how they use it is not clear. So I think the standards become more adopted. I would be shocked if they didn't get worked into the systems, but it'll be a while before there's a consensus.
I would just argue that looking at Kaiser Permanente in California, what they did with hypertension management, they apply that to PDO, is group health was done in Seattle, and it could be really much more dramatic drops in over-prescribing by providers, as opposed to asking different groups to come with policies that people may or may not read. If it's in the EHR, it could be in all providers, whether family practice, emergency medicine, OBGYN, et cetera, in that plan, because that's likely going to be the more
important. I think we have one system, our public health system, essentially in Indianapolis, actually has got a committee that has defined that policy for that health system, but our RIO covers multiple health systems, so there's not a standard across the system. So I think it's just a matter of time.
Until that's fully implemented, what you can do as public health advocates is to try to get your communities to educate prescribers to check this system voluntarily, and not just controlled substance prescribers, but any prescriber. Yeah.
And one of the things we've seen in Maine is that as we've decreased supply for opiates, we've had
And it's not an epidemic limited to Maine and in Indiana. It is something that's showing up all over with SAMHSA statistics as well. What we have on our side is we have these tools to identify people who are at risk for that. And I think intervening with education and treatment is one way to address that particular problem. Other questions? I thought I saw one more question out there. I think she was first. Yes, ma'am.
Well, this is for Dr. Wright. Indiana has a number of VA medical hospitals, and I would assume that data is not being put into the system.
Not yet.
Not yet. Would you be adding in the veterans as part of your population cluster and their use of it? And some of the systems that they use are like in Kentucky or...
Well, I don't think it'll change unless state legislators change the law and require them to be in court. We do know, in fact, that we haven't been able to estimate it, but in other analysis we've done, we've shown a huge uptick in the number of veterans with various kinds of mental health and substance abuse needs. Interestingly enough, the majority of those in Indiana seem to be going to non-VA facilities for mental health and substance abuse treatment. The reports we've been getting from the field suggest that there's concern about the stigma of being identified as a drug user or a substance user in the VA system. So a lot of our community providers who we've been working with over the years have said, you know, we have to do something about that. So I think there's now growing pressure. Unfortunately, we've had a lot of changeover in our governor's administration and even in our Department of Veterans Affairs in the last few years. So it's been hard to get a consistent sort of focus on that issue, but
I think just one more quick question. Yes, sir. I've not seen that particular issue. There are legitimate and concerns, significant concerns, about people misusing buprenorphine to continue their illicit or prescription opioid habits, and that's a concern because it's not medical intervention and it's probably not reducing the overall abuse and dependence problem that much. But thankfully, not initiating abuse directly with that particular product. Now, one of the unintended consequences of controlling Vicodin and Schedule 2 and what will people turn to, it's hard to say, but that is something to look at. There will be a session next on some of these questions about initiating heroin abuses and risk factors associated with prescription opioids in that regard. It is a significant risk, and what I've seen of the data, people move back and forth, you know, especially if they're injecting opioids. So use heroin for a while, then shift back to illicit prescription opioids, back and forth. So it's not something you could clearly define as going in just one direction. So it is a concern. Well, I'd like to thank our panelists. Very excellent presentations. And I think as public health advocates in the room, there are plenty of ways you can intervene locally to keep with the theme of this conference. disposal, take-back programs, disposal things, educate your practitioners, prescribers, dispensers in the area about these interventions, many things to do. So thank you all very much.